Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter, banter, banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Hey, hey.
Woohoo!
We survived another week. Happy first day of fall for us here.
Yeah.
Officially. I think summer decided to give us the big old middle fingers. Like, I'm not down yet.
Yeah, pretty much. That's been the week that I've had. It's been pretty much nonstop, like mid-90s to high 90s all week.
You poor thing.
And bright sun. No clouds, no nothing, just constant sun.
No wind.
And 90-some degrees. I'm done.
A little jealous of my friends in Colorado who keep saying, oh, hey, only got up to 68, 70 today. And I'm like going, I really don't like you right now.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, I'm loving it. Remember, I'm the freak of the group here, remember? It's like, yes, hot weather, yes, I love you. As soon as we get out of the 70s and get into the 60s, I'm like, I hate everything. It's
whereas that's where I live. That's the temperature at which I thrive.
Yeah, so everybody says, I know, I'm the weirdo.
No, I actually prefer cold. Like, ice cold all the time, so.
Yeah, Jules, I really do think you're in the majority.
What do you mean?
Most people like summer and warm over winter and cold.
Well, winter also means shoveling your goddamn driveway.
Only if it snows enough.
I live in the D.C. metro area. You've heard of some of the snowstorms we got.
Yeah, I think we've had one snowfall like that in the last 30 years.
Yeah, but I live a northern, much more northern latitude than you do.
Yeah, I'm below the Mason-Dixon line, and so instead of snow, we get ice.
Well, D.C. metro area, it's snow
doesn't
and
get
ice
cold enough.
And politicians, so. Yep, but.
Snow.
Segueing away from politics.
Yes.
No.
We don't want to talk about those.
Well,
not yet. We are going to actually have a topic about politics in games, but
that's
a different time.
Yes.
Alcohol and,
that is a different time.
Rules about the fight beforehand, like no biting, no punching below the belt.
We'll figure that stuff out when the show comes out. Don't worry about it. It's fine. So. Like I said, I've been running like crazy. I've been trying to read a game book that I have to review. I get to review it. It's actually really cool. It's going to be, the review is actually going to go up on Meeple Gamers in a week. So by the time you guys actually hear this, it will have already been out. And you will also have the audio review out.
So,
by the time this drops, because that's being turned around really quick.
You're doing a written review and an audio review? Or what, are you doing kind of like an audio book version of your review? It's like read along with Zendad.
Sort of. There's two books. No, there's two books that this company had said that they wanted to have reviewed. And the other guy who's going to be doing the other written review, the two of us are going to do one like 15-minute, 20-minute, it's going to be really short, little review show that's just going to be kind of like a brief overview as we talk about what we, you know, our impressions and stuff like that, that sometimes are easier to talk about than they are to write about. Because it's very easy to write about the technical elements. Oh, I liked this game mechanic because, you know, by doing the math, and you can show the math of how things work. And
I never thought you would actually
in audio, you lose that, but you get a richer thing.
You don't seem to be like a math lover here, my friend. You know that.
I know. I'm really not, but I need to do it sometimes. And I understand the underlying math behind a lot of the systems. I just,
I love math, so
worry about
yay,
it as
math.
Much as most other
makes
people.
Me happy.
So, but that's kind of what I'm going to be doing next week. And that's what I've been doing for most of this week, is trying to get through this book, because it's like 300 and some odd pages. And I thought that the book was going to be only like a 150, 200 page book. And it ended up clocking in
almost
350. Yikes. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm working through it. So yeah, it's going to get fun, but.
Oh, I went to the Maryland Red Room.
You guys been up to?
Past weekend. That was fun. Oh yeah. Yeah. Went out with my buddy Mark and my buddy Cynthia. And actually one of the neat things I've been chatting off and on with Cynthia about is, you know, going to conventions and, you know, especially like when, like for me, it's like, I like having like little physical props and stuff like that. So a lot of these like small time vendors, I'm trying to talk about, okay, what's appropriate etiquette? How do you talk to somebody like that? You know, certain weird social faux pas. And she's given me a lot of great insight on, because my thing is like, you know, you pay the artist so that way they can art, but you know, weird, like when you're doing that, weird situations come up. So she's given me a lot of really cool advice, you know? So I'm like, oh my gosh. And Mark, oh my gosh, I had no idea he would be so engaged on the Facebook thing. I'm like, this is the coolest thing. It's like, we've been getting a lot of people on the Facebook just like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah, the Facebook group in the last couple of days has really blown up.
We'll put a link to that down in the doobly-doo. So we'll make sure we like, put, we
way
keep
more
up
than
putting
I ever
a link
thought
to
we were
going to get.
Because
we have the Facebook one. That's for the podcast, and then we have like the group for discussions and chit chats and stuff like that. And you know, come by, say hi. You know.
Yeah.
There's been some great questions and some good conversations going on in the group. It's really nice to see.
Yeah, yeah. The two that actually have come up with the newest ones is Pat. I've known Pat for years. We went to high school together. So, and he was actually kind of the one that started. Yeah, I know, right?
And Scott, not Steve Flowers.
And then there's Scott, not Steve Flowers. And those are the two guys that have come up with the most questions and like throwing things out. But in the last episode, we asked people, you know, what other podcasts are you guys listening to that are ways of introducing systems and stuff that are easy to use and new, just altogether new? And Scott, not Steve Flowers, he mentioned the One Shot podcast. And that is an awesome like idea for a show, is doing just one shots. And if that's what he's doing, that's amazing. And that is a really cool way to get, if you're not sure if you want to play it, listen. And if he's doing one, then you may be able to find out that that's like the game that you want to run, like, or something. So
I love the fact that that was really cool. I have missed so much of this. All right. I hope I have a lot of traffic because I'm downloading every episode.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been remiss in my podcast listening lately. I let everything pile up after like a week, and I have like 3 hours of shows left after a whole week.
Good. Hey, at least you got some listening, right?
Because I listened to a few today. Yeah.
Play on that.
It's been fun. So. Yeah. So yeah, I've pretty much taken over most of the banter this week.
You're totally within your right.
I have a lot going on this week, though.
You know, this is your car. You're in the driver's seat. You know, the rest of us is like one of us is doing audio and the other one's doing directions. Yeah. We're a little weird.
Yeah, well, we tend to do that. So.
No. It's not crazy. Yeah, I'm crazy.
It's crazy. You,
I just, you know.
So, yes. Now. Well, yes. Oh, did you see that?
I didn't think all he saw had the balance for segues.
You're learning the segue skills.
Yeah. I don't. I've taken too many blows to, you know, from the old snake.
I don't get it. What?
Come on, seriously?
No, it is like
Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin.
No, it's one too many hits with the snake.
The genie is talking to one too many punches with the old snake from the old snake.
I haven't seen it in years.
No. All right, fine, whatever. So yeah.
But that does move us to our main topic.
Yes, it does, which is yes and yes but.
My favorite word.
And no. And why those three ideas are actually very, very important as a game master.
And a lot of this terminology, a lot of the use of yes and, comes from the narrative structure of modern games, and it's taken from improv training and improv comedy. What you see in the theatrical or improv terms is something that would be called an offer, a player's action, anything that will move a narrative forward. And those three options are how you can frame your response, and how you frame it shapes the narrative of the game and shapes the feel of the game. Yes and is an open response to encourage a continuation of the story, or to be used to increase the effect or the result of the mechanical decision made by the players. Yes but is a kind of moderating
glitch in
response where there's success,
you know, succeed,
but there's a disadvantage, there's a setback, there's something that not quite a glitch, but
well,
and then no is the closed response.
Yeah, well, and also the no response, the way I always looked at it is no is a way, because so many games nowadays are leaning more towards the narrative approach of yes and
you actually have to have the spine to use it.
But there is a time and a place for
that's
no.
That's the big thing.
Yes. And yeah, it is very important. You have to learn when is the right time to use each of these, because they all serve different purposes and different points in the game that you're running. Because a player will be like, so I want to swing from the chandelier, do a backflip,
and he's not a swashbuckler,
and drive my sword into the Duke's eye. And he's, let him be. That's not the important part. He's, with new players especially, you want to be able to say yes, and then you add a condition to it. Like, yeah, you can do that. And because this is what you normally do, because you're a swashbuckler, it goes off without a hitch.
The thing is, with yes, but, you know, you roll, and then yes, but you say, I have come up with this. If somebody's doing a, all right, a lot of it comes up with untrained skills, stuff like that. What it also allows to do is yes, but, and there's actually a little bit of dramatic tension that comes up because they're not trained in it. It's like, you do this, but, and it's, it might not even have a horrible, like, you know, oh, you know, you alerted the guards or something, but it actually adds a little bit of tension, and they're like, they feel a little bit more, you know, gaspy, taking a risk, you know, and that's actually a really good, if you want to build a little bit more, like, you know, the tension release, you know, you want to build up a little bit more tension, and then, because you can actually chain these things, too.
Sure.
Well, a lot of it, like I said, you see it as shaping how the game progresses. And the if there is not a mechanical basis for your yes and, yes but, no distinctions, the frequency you use those defines for your players the feeling of the game and defines for you the flow of that narrative. And that's something else to think about. The yes and is always going to build on itself and always going to encourage the players to take one more step, which you want. Now, the thing is, you also get to yes and the opposition.
Yep.
That's the other thing. This applies to moving the narrative forward. Any action or decision that will move a narrative forward. Yes, buts create more complications, create more hardships, create more...
There's not a lot of ending.
I think tension and drama are great ways of describing that.
At least in a nice
way. And, yeah.
Well, you know what I mean.
And yeah. So, yeah, you're...
it's not like, and I swing from the chandelier, and I kick
totally
him in the butt,
more
and
ending.
I cut his pants, and they fall down, and he trips. I don't do a lot of that. It's like, yes, but... but that... Oh, it's true.
Yeah, see, I think you can do yes and even in horror games because you can just keep ratcheting the bad with every decision that they do.
Without
adding a
but,
you can just keep adding on and adding on just by saying and.
There's a limit of the, you know, and you can keep building. Into next month. Next month. Foreshadowing.
Which will be something we dive really deep into in upcoming episodes.
Yeah.
Now, we mentioned no earlier. Hint. No is from the improv tradition, where this terminology comes from, you want to avoid no's. It's the least used, least common, often shunned response because it shuts down a line and offer a movement. But for role-playing
because
games,
sometimes,
I think we've all kind of agreed, there is a time and a place you do
sounds,
have to say
like you have an
no,
adventure and
to
stuff
block,
like that,
to cancel that.
I don't want
to
say
offer.
There's an intentional derail. Yeah. Not exactly, but, you know, there are choices and you're kind of like, wait, no, no. You know.
Okay.
Oh, explain.
So I'm gonna give you guys. I did the no in my last game session. Okay. Now I did it completely mechanically, without having to actually say no at all in the entire combat. So
okay.
The players are like. Sixth level, the group is five strong. They go against two, that's it. Two Driders, which for those who don't know, are drow elves that have
Drider man.
The lower body of spiders.
Okay.
Yeah, just real simple. That's what they are. And
not everyone knows what challenge so rating means, dude.
They are in Pathfinder, they are a CR7 encounter.
No, what a challenge rating is.
So, well, that's why I said with Pathfinder, this is what it is. So it's about it's a little stronger than what your normal group should be able to handle. But with five players, they should be easily able to handle one. Throwing a second one made it a little tougher. But what I also did on top of that, because my goal is I wanted them to be locked up inside of a city to go to the next part of the the campaign. And I needed them alive without killing them, because that's the easy way to kill them. You know, the easy way to just, you know, capture them is to kill them. And then you've ended the campaign and it's a whole other problem. But so what I did was I used the drow have a certain type of poison that puts people to sleep because they are very fond of slavery, being evil and chaotic in nature. So they're like, slaves do all the work and we just sit back and relax. That's what we're doing. So basically this set of driders captured an entire party of five because I made the poison stronger than what the book said. One of the players knows lots and lots of things in the book. And he's like, nothing has a challenge rating that like with or has a save that's that high for a poison. And I'm like, no, there are. And I just kept running with it.
Yeah, it wasn't and the railroad, it was, you know, where
high. It was high,
a bajillion.
But it wasn't so ridiculously high that no one could have made the roll. Right. But it was strategically designed to, originally it was going to be, this was a way to introduce an NPC that, a guy who can play very, very infrequently. Basically, we made him like three characters that he can play whenever he's available, wherever they're at in the campaign line. So, and at various levels about where they should be. So at the last minute, I found out that he wasn't going to be able to make the game. So I then had to change the encounter so that they were captured. Instead of going one direction, I had to give him another. I had to go in another direction. So what I did was mechanically by raising that save
but not
so
making
high
it mechanically impossible,
that
so
the
you,
average
it's not the, oh you got railroaded kind of a thing
PC would have a hard time making it. Right. I just made it really, really high. And there was one dude left at the end of the fight. It was a cleric. It was the group's cleric. He was the only one left standing still. And he was clerics just like, matter. I can't get away and I can't do anything to them.
Oh, ooh.
And with God, the two ow. Heaviest hitters in the party shit, huh? Knocked out in the very first surprise in the surprise round, I knocked them out. So it hurt for the rest of the fight, for all the rest of them. But they had almost killed one of the two. So, I mean, they really, if it had just been a regular one, even with that really high DC for the fortitude save, they would have been okay, but they weren't anymore because that one rule.
That's
just
smart.
I changed what was in the book because I had an element of the story that I was trying to tell. So,
well, and
that's
that use of changing the crunch in this framework is something to keep in mind for games that aren't inherently narrative. that are crunch heavy. Say you're playing original D&D. Say you're playing Shadowrun. Say you are playing Rollmaster. The idea of building that yes and yes but no conceit behind the scenes helps. Make a saving throw easier and don't tell your PCs if you want the yes and, or let them, in describing what happens, create a situation that lets you give them an environmental bonus or penalty. Encourage the flowery language, encourage the dramatic and narrative descriptions, and you can work in this yes and, yes but no concept, even for crunchy games that predate the use of that framework.
Yeah. I mean, I did it with Pathfinder, which, you know, that book alone, you know, is like a D6 worth of damage every time you hit somebody with it. I mean, it's a big book, and it's a crunchy system, and yeah, it can be done. You just mm-hmm. have to, sometimes mm-hmm. you have to think a little bit outside of the normal framework that the game is written for.
You are allowed to bend the rules.
I was going to say, the rules are only guidelines.
The strength of those guidelines varies from system to system, but always, at the end of the day, if you're playing a 1980s era D&D game, and the thief wants to swing off the chandelier to try to stab the Duke in the eye, let him make a roll against his dex. Go ahead and apply the backstab ability. You know what? That's unexpected. He's not defending against that. That's an interesting use. Give them that agency to make those changes. And that's where a lot of this comes from. Like we said earlier, it comes from improv comedy, where the goal isn't to stop, but to build, but to keep going, to add, to yes and even the audience suggestions, like you're on a Klingon ship. Yes, yeah. And you roll with it.
Right. And what else is going on, you know? You know, why are you on there? That's where you can just start adding those conditions and situations. And it does. It makes for a way more interesting game to say yes and, or yes but, because it's a way to control. I don't even really like the word control. It's a way to frame what's currently happening in the story that you're trying to tell in this game. And I think that that's a really easy way to do it, is just using those five words, which a lot of people are afraid. I mean, now they're starting to come around a little more to using those, but most people don't even talk about the no.
Well, what are games and systems that you have seen use this to great effect?
You first.
Before we move off our main topic, how have you two seen it incorporated into games? Because I've got two examples that I do want to talk about, but I want to see what else you've seen.
Oh, boy.
While you're thinking, recently played a fun weekend of the Fantasy Flight Star Wars game, and I really found, and we all agreed, that the way it's set up really advances yes and, yes but storytelling. If you've seen the Fantasy Flight game, they have dice you have to get from them that you roll with successes, advantages, disadvantages, etc. So you can roll no success on what you're trying to do with a load of advantages. So you fail the action you're trying to take, but end up positioned in a more advantageous position. You end up in a better place to move forward. You succeed at what you're trying to do, but end up in a worse position, which is very Star Wars, in all fairness.
Yeah, that is.
And it really struck us as separating out the whole success and advantage results really was a good way to do this. Now, the other one that I want to talk about uses the words exactly. And it is the Cubicle 7 Doctor Who game, where the success table, as far as how much you beat the difficulty, is described as the best, yes and, yes, yes but, failing, no but, no, no and. They absolutely use that exact how far above or below that threshold that the storyteller sets for you to try to succeed is defined in, you know, disastrous, no and, bad, no, failure, no, but, success, yes, but. And Doctor Who, I think, is another example of a property that benefits from that kind of drama and that kind of amplification of effect. Oh, we're going to talk more about this game. Oh, just you wait. Spoilers. And those are really two of some of the best I've seen lately. And wanted to really point out that they do a great job with this conceit.
Passing grades.
But what about you two?
And failing grades.
Well,
because they I'm trying to, like in the Doctor Who thing, but the thing with Little Fears is, okay, how many you they have like locked in target numbers, like easy, medium, hard, holy cow, like legendary, and when you beat a target number and it's by X amount, they actually have in the book, it's like, all right, you beat the target number. All right, it's just simple success. It was just yes, you know. But if, you know, certain dice rolls, and they have it set out, so if you beat it by X amount, they'll like, oh, yes, and then they'll have, and they describe what, and here's a nice thing, they describe what kind of ands you can have. It's like, you unlock the door on time, you're able to jimmy the lock on time, and are able to actually maneuver yourself so that the next, you're going to be able to shut the thing before the monster gets there, as a positive and. They don't tell you, you know, what, but like, for example, you know, and the other one is, you know, if you fail, they're like, it's the, you know, you can, and here's the thing, they actually tell you, you can make them think they succeeded. It's a yes, but. It's like, oh yeah, you get it open in time, but now your arm is stuck in the door. So they give you the, you know, how if they just didn't make it, all right, you don't want to punish them too horribly, but if they fail, but they don't know that they fail because you don't tell them the target number. They just tell you a number and, you know? So they'll just say it's like what the target number is, and if you fail, you know, you don't have to tell them. You can actually pull the yes but in a failure. And it's I love how they do it. And I love the examples they give. It's like, oh yeah, you get the thing open. You know what? It's coming behind you, and the door opens towards you. You didn't look at the hinges. They always put the, is like using a failure to put in a yes but, and that's built into the mechanics of Little Fears. So.
Yeah. I don't know if I would say that this one has it hard baked into the system, but the World of Darkness, because everything is so story driven, that always has the ability to really use the three, because in it you can fail something and still be kind of, yes, I failed, but something else has happened. Or, you know, because, yeah, I think I've actually seen that where it's like I remember playing something at one point and I think I failed at something and it was yes, But, and that was actually how he phrased it. It was like, yes, you failed, but this other thing happened. And it wasn't just, oh, it was a condition that had already existed. Like, he had created it where if something failed, then this other thing would happen. And it's kind of anything that's really heavily driven by the story, I think, is always going to, more often than not, really kind of rely heavily on those more mm-hmm. improv and story driven elements. They'll always show up in a game like that. So Old World of Darkness, New World of Darkness, those much more story based games will almost always have that. So I think that's where I'm going to go with that one.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think sums up not just yes and yes, but no, but game systems that use it and how to use it in other systems.
We will put links to that down in the doobly-doo.
A wonderful topic, and as you hear us say often, we've only scratched the surface of where we can go.
But... yeah. And if you know of any other games, let us know in the Facebook group. because not only will we, you know, like if we get somebody that talks about it, we'll talk about it the next show, like we did this with this one. Because the more interaction we can get with everyone, that's the whole point of this, is I wanted us to be able to interact with everybody. If somebody's got questions about either the show or something gaming related,
honestly, because that's actually
the guy, Pat, who is my buddy from high school. Like, he was asking about something about tracking factions and how do you do it in your games? Like, how factions work and everything. And, like, the interactions between different factions and where you mm-hmm. align on those factions and everything else. It was like, well, how do you set that up? How do you set it up for your game? And so, yeah, it's one of those things where I'm just like, oh, you know what? And I thought about it, and I wrote just a real quick reply, but then I started thinking more and more about mm-hmm. it, and I gave another bigger write-up on it, because there's lots of stuff that, you know, we won't always think of everything, and if we get a really good...
aside from there are awesome people in the Facebook group, like, and there are a lot of fun to talk with,
and that into cool stuff an entire comes up, episode.
So, it's additional.
So, those are all great mm-hmm. things to... for reasons to get into the Facebook group, because that's where a lot of that's... Yeah. Yeah, it's additional interaction. So, yeah. So I think we are going to go ahead and roll into our stat blocks.
This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
Sorry about that. For some reason, it wasn't, I don't know, Flash just died on me or something. Sorry about that. Fix it in post. Yeah, we're nuts.
It happens.
Yeah, it's all right.
So, I didn't have one last week. Okay. It's okay. It's been hot.
No.
We've got someone doing post?
Yeah, not really. not now. Just so everybody knows, I don't have a stat block. I'm horrible. I've been trying to put together a review, that's what's taking up most of my time.
This week, I have the Bastille of Bone.
All right, so then
tyrants always want to keep their playthings close.
Joel.
The most sanguinary of despots will combine their love of bloodshed and their absolute oppression of their subjects. This will lead to the creation of the Bastille of Bone. Originally a standard jail, built as a place to hold dissidents, over the years, it grows into an entity all its own. The tyrants would imprison anyone they saw as a threat in the Bastille. And to indulge the tyrant's sadistic tastes, the prisoners were used as animals to be hunted, subjects of horrible experiments, magical, mental, and or physical, and sometimes they were just outright slaughtered. As the tyrant grips his land tighter and tighter, his enemies grow in number. As such, the jail has to grow to hold more people. And as the jail grew, the Bastille of Bones started to awaken. And as the Bastille grew, stones and mortar of the structure were supplemented with the bones, blood, and sinew of prisoners, binding their psychic imprint into the Bastille. The psychic echoes have continually tortured the prisoners, delighting both the tyrant and the jailers, who are selected for having the perfect blend of blind loyalty and bloodlust. As the Bastille of Bone grows and evolves, the holding cells start to develop their own unique feel, from rage to insanity to the complete, utter absence of humanity. The jailers delight in moving prisoners between the cells just to see how they react. And the Bastille of Bone grows in power. But buildings last longer than dynasties. And long after the tyrant's name has been forgotten, the Bastille of Bone still stands. The stories of what happened here fade from the collective consciousness. But the evil done here permeates the structure and surrounding lands. The trees grow gnarled and twisted. The grass isn't soft. It's rough, sharp. The sun doesn't even fully seem to shine on the area. The poison of what happened at the Bastille of Bones will forever infect the land. And even now, those that gaze upon it feel those psychic echoes, the twisted, silent screams of the victims, the final legacy of the Bastille of Bones. What? What are you laughing at? It's just like you I don't know what it is, but some of my stuff you there's these audible weird things you do, and I'm like, I have no idea how to take that.
Excellent.
Well, let's just put I don't come up with
that was good
fluffy bun. Well, that'd probably scare the hell out of somebody if I came up with something cute and fluffy bunny. All right. Now we have Gardemanges. I like his stuff.
Usually a good sign. That means that I'm like, how can I use this?
Yeah. All right, I've got something that's actually based in reality, or at least real legends, designed for a pulp or cyber pulp or steampunk setting. And specifically, what I have for you today is Nebuchadnezzar's map. At the turn of the 20th century, the world is yet full of wonders and unexplored parts of the globe. Nebuchadnezzar's map promises to show you parts not yet claimed and a legend not yet defined. A map of the ancient Levant ascribed to Nebuchadnezzar entices many explorers from across the globe. The mysteries in it appeal to everyone. A big game hunter, fallen scion of a British family, has reached out to you for help. He claims to have the map, and wants you to help him follow it to treasure, and restoring his family honor. The treasure is not a secret at all once you glance at the map unfurled on the billiards table where you meet this lackluster example of British royalty. Clear even to you, without the ability to read the ancient script, the map depicts the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. Last of the seven wonders of the ancient world to be found. Babylon itself, as you know it, isn't the location, at least not on the map. Perhaps your scholarly friends tell you the word itself reveals more about the place, and not the name of the place. Babylon means, after all, Gate of the Gods, and that could be found anywhere. Nebuchadnezzar was described as a warrior and a man of great faith, depending on which treatise you read. And do you think he left behind this map without obstacles? Only one who could exemplify the traits of a true leader, a king like Nebuchadnezzar, could know how to pass these tests and challenges that will beset you on your way, all the while haunted by the shadowy cult that has hounded your patron ever since he won the map.
Sure, but I'm like, event. I don't care about this. It sounds so
are
neat.
You ready to follow the clues left behind?
Oh my god, there's a pulp.
Gardens of Babylon and whatever secrets they hold.
Oh, God, I can't remember the name of the game. I'll remember it after the podcast, because I know I do. But it's a pulp kind of...
And that is still, we still do not have a definitive answer of where or you know, what like, the Hanging Gardens
were. When the pyramids were being picked up, and I'm like, oh my gosh!
That is nice. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Really? Oh, dude.
Well, if you remember the corner stat block I did previously, that was based on the same timeline where they
Forbidden
were excavating
Kingdoms.
That
was
actually
the
also
pulp adventure.
Worked in a little bit of real history as far as when...
I remembered it, yay!
Another part of the Ancient Wonders of the... Ancient, the Seven Wonders of the Ancient World was used in a stat block.
Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The Temple of Zeus.
The building was built as I described it at the same time they were excavating and possibly having parts of the Temple of Zeus stolen.
Okay.
All right, what do we got?
But now that you have something to use to torment your players this evening.
Yeah. And those are some good ones.
Why don't we move on to
Unman.
All right. The word is unman.
A man from, you know.
Okay.
It is a verb.
Okay.
Do we happen to have any ideas?
Emasculate?
Yeah, that's one of them. Yeah, there's actually two definitions for unman. One is to deprive of manly vigor, fortitude, or spirit, and to castrate or emasculate. And its first known use was 1599.
That's more recent than I would have thought.
Yeah. There is no etymology for it. It is exactly what it is. Like, there was nothing. Like, I looked, I didn't see anything. I'm like, well, it was first used at 1700. So, yeah, that would make sense. There wouldn't be anything.
Well, like, as long as English has been sitting around rifling through other languages' pockets behind the woodshed after beating him up. Oh, look, I found this word. I've got a verb. I have this verbal modifier. Oh, yeah. You know what?
Yeah. Yeah. And it is in the English language, it is in the bottom 30% of words commonly used. So...
Yeah, not really common these days.
No. No, we just use castrate or to, you
know. Manger, you start, because you told me you had a good one.
Whatever. So, yeah, that was it. That was the lexicon. Really easy one today. So, all right. So, I think we are going to go ahead and wrap this bad boy up. And let's go ahead and jump right into our closing remarks.
Well, I at least had one. I'd come up with one ahead of time. Closing remarks. We talk about consuming a lot of things, a lot of inspiration. And one of the things I'm going to talk to you about as far as yes and, yes but, and no is a pair of comic book limited series. The original is called The American Way. The sequel is The American Way, Those Above and Those Below. It is by John Ridley with art by George Janti. If you the name John Ridley sounds familiar, it should. He wrote 10 Years a Slave. The original miniseries was 10 years ago, 8 issues collected, and we'll have a link in the doodly-doo. The sequel is on stands now. set in the 60s and 70s, respectively, with a superhero setup that explores the politics and relations of the United States in the 60s and 70s. And I think it is an engaging and really great showing of how to use a superhero setting, as well as you can see examples of yes and, yes but, and no.
Remember when we were kids, we had those Choose Your Own Adventure books?
That's really cool.
Romeo Loves Juliet. Or
all right, Jules, what you Rosaline, got?
Or Viola. Or Orlando. So pretty much, it's probably one of the weirdest things is like, it starts out standard Shakespeare, and then you pick. And depending on what you pick, you can actually like giant robots and weird mind game. It's one of the weirdest things I've ever, and every time you read it, and choose something different.
Hell yeah.
But it makes sense logically in the flow of things, but you're like, what the deuce? And for me, it was interesting because it shows different ways you can, because, all right, and I was thinking about it this way, is like, if we're, okay, Romeo and Juliet, if we just ran this way, okay, if it was a game, it'd be a railroad if they couldn't veer from it. So the choose your own adventure thing adds that. Okay, just because we're not following your original story doesn't mean it's not fun. So, you know, it's
that is great.
I couldn't stop laughing with some of it. Of course, I did the, you know, first do your regular and, you know, do it the way it's supposed to be. And now let's go nuts. Forgive me, Gardemanger. I know you love Shakespeare, as I do, but damn, that's funny!
Yeah.
Considering how many words I made up, that makes sense. But.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, no. Then Zen can be the moderator and you and I can talk, because you've got a little bit more experience, but I have read everything and seen a whole bunch. And,
we can do a whole
other
episode about Shakespeare's influence on modern storytelling and what it means to actually define humanity through the use of Shakespeare's language.
We could.
I'm going to read that.
But we probably won't because...
I'm going to, now that I know
I hear Zendead kind of looking at me funny going...
Well, what you got there, Zen?
I have not... Yeah, it'd be interesting, that's for sure.
There's an actual 800-page academic book, Shakespeare and the Invention of the Human.
Oh my god. And you've read it?
Well, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well,
I haven't seen it, but it's in my to watch list.
And I have actually been, in what little bit of free time I've had, I have been watching I believe it was supposed to be a kid's show. And it is, Del Toro did it. And it's on Netflix right now. And it's Trollhunters. I don't know if you guys have actually seen this show or not. It's interesting because like there are some amazing voice actors in this that you're just like, really? What is Kelsey Grammer doing in this show? He's one of the main characters. Like, I was just like, and I've been like just watching it like constantly for the last couple of days. And it has been really, really interesting. And he's telling this whole new story that is super tight, And it has very... Because he is a phenomenal storyteller in his own right. When he's doing it in this way, there's a world that he has built that sits just underneath our world. And then there's another one under that. And they're just now getting ready to start going into that third world. And it is very interesting to see how this is going to play out, because it is not what I was expecting.
Definitely gonna
like
now.
When I first started watching it, I'm just like, ugh, kid show.
But it's like I said, it's Del Toro.
And my daughter won't have anything to do with it.
Damn. You know?
And she will just run damn. Off. So me and my wife are sitting there watching it, and
he
it was
knows
just
how
like,
to, he knows
this
how to
just
craft
keeps
the story.
Getting and actually better and well, better gonna, as it goes on. And so, yeah, I was completely floored by that. Like, I was not expecting it.
That'll be make it easier.
So, yeah. Watch that. It's fun. So, yeah. 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 It's good. It is well worth the watch. And each episode is only 22 minutes. So, yeah, it way beats the, you know, hour long or 45 minute long constant chew through to get through stuff. So, yeah, definitely worth checking out. So.
You can contact us
there we
the
go.
Show by using Twitter,
that's a,
Facebook,
I think that's a wrap,
or regular
guys.
Old email. Our Twitter
so,
accounts
until
are
next week.
At Zended.
At Jules Podcaster.
And have fun. Roll some
and
dice.
Show's Twitter account
do something gaming related.
Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/seizethegm.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@seizethegm.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0, unported license.